If you haven't already, explore the many ways to connect with our show. Watch full uncut conversations on YouTube, gain AIA-approved continuing education credits through Arcademy, and make sure to check us out and follow us on social media at Detailed Podcast. This is an original podcast by RCAT. Try the number one most used website for finding building product information and save time and money. No registration is required with RCAT, so try it today and get ahead on your next project. Visit RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com.
The whole point is you're bringing the manufacturing process into the construction process, and we're trying to convert the construction process into automated manufacturing process somehow, because that has to happen at some point to avoid this ever spiraling cost disease that's in our construction industry right now. So that there's the only way to solve that inevitably accelerating cost disease is to automate. And that means we have to begin manufacturing our buildings like we manufacture everything else in the world.
And these are both tools for the home builder. You know, these are tools that help the builders build more efficiently, build faster, and be able to build more homes with the same amount of people. And at the same time, you're also getting a better, more customizable product at the end, and better in terms of, you know, stronger and more energy efficient.
This is Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. I am your host, Charisse Lakeside, Senior Specification Writer at RDH Building Science and fondly known as the CSI Kraken. We will speak with professionals who share their insights into the most complex, interesting, and odd building conditions and the ingenuity it took to make it work. Join me as I pull back the curtain on the building industry and uncover the lessons learned. You'll gain valuable knowledge to help you better navigate your next project. My guests today are Tim Lankow and Ethan Wong, both co-CEOs and founders of Hive Assembled, and that's Hive, ASMBLD, based in Houston, Texas. Tim began his professional career as an attorney in the construction world before immersing himself as a thought leader in the 3D printing and construction innovation space. Alongside partners, he founded Hive Assembled, aiming to tackle the housing affordability challenge by combining robotics, prefabrication, and advanced material science. At Hive Assembled, Tim leads the development of 3D printed homes and oversees groundbreaking initiatives that underscore his commitment to equitable, innovative homeownership. Driven by the belief that every family deserves a safe, affordable place to call home, Tim's vision is not just building houses, but to shape a sustainable, resilient future of homeownership. Growing up in Silicon Valley, Ethan was surrounded by innovation and quickly developed a passion for building, whether it was Legos, rockets, or early tech prototypes. He created a location sharing app that predated Snapchat Maps, say that three times fast, and later studied mechanical engineering at Harvard. At Harvard, he joined ICON as one of its earliest engineering hires, gaining hands-on experience in advanced construction technologies. Now, as co-founder of Hive Assembled, Ethan is reinventing construction from the ground up. Alongside co-founder Tim Lankow, he's developing a 3D printing-based building system designed to radically reduce costs, improve quality, and empower crews to construct homes faster and more efficiently than ever before. The project we're talking about today is the Red Rock House, located in Red Rock, Texas. But before we get started, don't forget to take a look at the project photos and drawings as you listen along. You can click the link in our show notes or visit www.rcat.com/podcast. The Red Rock House stands as a bold experiment in the future of residential design. A seamless blend of 3D printed construction and prefabricated panel technology nestled within the Blue Sky Estates subdivision. What began as a bare 2-acre site has become a serene escape less than 45 minutes from Austin, surrounded by wide open views and the quiet rhythm of the Texas landscape.
This was really a concept house to, you know, take what we had learned on the first dozen or so projects that we'd done. It was a combination of smaller casitas and ADUs plus a couple custom homes that we had done, where we realized that there was a true performance and functionality and design aesthetic benefit that we could provide with the building system we're working with, you know, combining 3D printing and prefab components. And so we had done a lot of projects in the Texas Triangle, but in slightly more rural markets. And we wanted to do something a little closer to a major city. And so this house is only 45 minutes from Austin. And it was designed to be a real showpiece in terms of what we could do in terms of functionality, cost, and design features. And for pursuing that passive house standard to show really what the potential of the system can provide on all of those fronts. And so this was designed to be a really cool, really energy efficient concept home to show what the future of 3D printing and home building really looks like. It also in a really great setting. So it's at this subdivision called Blue Sky Estates, minimum 2-acre lots, and you've got sweeping views of the hills and great sunsets and all of that. So it's a cool house in an even better setting.
The other thing that we're kind of in the evolution of this house was we built a big custom house, and we had been testing kind of the energy efficiency of the wall system. And we were getting really good numbers without spending a lot of the extra cost and time and energy that you would do to get those numbers, because the 3D printing is naturally energy efficient because it's, these are big monolithic concrete walls. We use a special lightweight concrete to fill the walls in that has some good insulation properties to it. And they have just so much thermal mass so that they really do take advantage of that thermal flywheel effect like you're building with an adobe or stone. And we're getting that without a lot of the extra cost. So when we talked to the passive house people, we said, like, hey, as a concept, getting a certified passive house is typically a very expensive proposition with all the bells and whistles that they want. We think we can get there basically doing what we're doing already, just with a few tweaks, a little bit thicker walls and things like that. So we said we should try it. We should try and see if we can get to those numbers that you're looking for the passive house certification without spending an extra $150,000 in triple studded walls and all the stuff that they normally want for a passive house.
In order to fully grasp the revolutionary approach to this project, Tim and Ethan explain exactly what 3D printed construction is and why they adopted a hybrid system as part of their design ethos for all of their projects.
3D printing is a form of additive manufacturing. Additive manufacturing is the process of taking a raw material and producing a kind of customizable finished product in one step. So 3D printing is one form of that, probably the most prolific form of that. And so what we do is it's a concrete, it doesn't use Portland cement, it uses a pozzolanic cement replacement that we developed over the last few years. But it's a concrete slash mortar that we mix through a custom mixing system that we build, and then we have an industrial robot that lays that concrete down layer by layer to produce basically a concrete wall or a concrete structure that we then finish off with a panelized building system for roofs and things like that.
Also, the way that works in theory or in practice is more like icing on a cake. So if you think about, you know, icing a cake, that's essentially how you 3D print a house, but with concrete.
All our homes are hybrid in the sense that not every piece of the house is 3D printed. So there are some portions of the home that don't make sense to 3D print right now, primarily the roof, because some parts of the world, concrete roofs are pretty common, but they're not really necessary here. So we have a, Ethan has a slick panelized system that we can use for the roof and elements that we don't 3D print. So we'll call that a hybrid. I mean, all 3D printed houses are hybrids in that sense. There's no such thing out there in the world as a 3D printed house that doesn't have, you know, wood frame construction or something else for roofs and closets and some interior walls and things like that. Ours is a bit of a different species of hybrid because our vision is that whatever we don't 3D print is prefabricated. So we're trying to kind of marry the best elements of on-site automation via 3D printing with off-site automation via prefabrication.
You know, eventually in 5-7 years, we'd love to have a fully 3D printed home where, you know, everything in that home is 3D printed. And, you know, there's a lot of different materials that we'll need to use to make that happen. But that 3D printing architecture as a complete building and a complete structure is closer than we think, and we'd like to be the ones who make that happen. But the way that Tim and I have combined our systems and the way we really collaborated in the first place is that I was working on a prefab system, which was essentially a Lego kit for housing. And, you know, it was lightweight. There was no wood. It was all composite and metal. And it was designed to really speed up the building shell process. So we're not creating a system and a product to replace the entire home, but to really provide all the functional space and the engineering so that, you know, after you have your building kit, it's a very simple way to add your finishes and complete the home. But we saw a lot of potential combining this panelized prefab kit with 3D printed wall structures to where we can create this new type of building and new type of home in a lot less time, at a lower cost, and increasing the performance of everything. So our vision is that there is going to be a lot more automation, both on-site and off-site, when it comes to construction and building houses, and the ability to, you know, completely design and engineer a building kit will facilitate that process to make it faster and easier to build. And so these prefab components really marry well with the 3D printed wall systems, and there's a lot of potential to finish all sorts of structures and complete buildings that you couldn't build otherwise.
Yeah, and there's a deep science between when it's more efficient to use an additive manufacturing process versus when it's more efficient to use a traditional manufacturing process. So in the manufacturing world outside of housing, you know, in construction, you'll see things like, you know, injection molding and cast and die manufacturing, and then you'll compare that to additive manufacturing. And there's all kinds of economics and studies that go into, you know, when is it appropriate to use an additive process as opposed to a traditional process. And there's factors that go into that, you know, things like what type of product you're building, how customized does the product need to be, how difficult is it to produce and ship in one central location versus having kind of miniature factories that are using the additive process closer to where the product's going to be consumed. And so when you go through that analysis in construction, invariably, you're going to find that certain parts of the process are going to fall on the pure additive side where we should be 3D printing, you know, this either on site or very near site. And then other things are going to fall on the efficiency line of we should be producing these through a more traditional process offsite. But the whole point is you're bringing the manufacturing process into the construction process, and we're trying to convert the construction process into automated manufacturing process somehow, because that has to happen at some point to avoid this ever spiraling cost disease that's in our construction industry right now. So that there's the only way to solve that inevitably accelerating cost disease is to automate. And that means we have to begin manufacturing our buildings like we manufacture everything else in the world.
And these are both tools for the home builder. You know, these are tools that help the builders, you know, build more efficiently, build faster, and be able to build more homes with the same amount of people. And at the same time, you're also getting a better, more customizable product at the end. And better in terms of you know, stronger and more energy efficient.
A key element of the 3D printed construction is the robotic system responsible for precisely laying the concrete directly on site.
We have a couple partners that we work with that we design them with, and they help us build them. But most of our equipment we've built either with a partner, and we've used a few, or we build from the ground up. There are commercially available 3D printing robots out there. So far, our experience with them is they don't work well yet, and the support chain for them is not there yet, and the logistics chain is not there yet. And the printing mortar we've developed, which is probably our most important technology, the robot is, you know, it's not too difficult an engineering challenge to adapt an industrial robot to run a 3D printing toolpath. So that's done in a lot of industries, and that's generally technology that's available to those that want to go out and find it. The bigger issue is trying to marry the very imprecise nature of concrete with the precision that a robot wants to work with. And so really it's the printing mortars, the mixing and the pumping technology that's the harder part. And because what the materials we use are so unique, they set in like this concrete setting in under 2 minutes. So it's just a world different than any other substance out there. I mean, we're printing a wall in like 30 minutes, like 10 by 10 feet. And then within 5 minutes of it done printing, it's strong enough to lift and move and install somewhere. So there's no setting curing time, but that brings a whole host of challenges that you have to develop kind of really custom equipment for. And that just doesn't exist out there in the world. So Ethan and I, we have in-house engineering, we engineer it, we test it, we build it, we change it, we test it, we build it, we change it. And this is a very iterative process to get to a system that works efficiently.
As one can imagine, a set of unique considerations must be taken into account with a 3D printed home that you might not have to consider on a typical stick built project.
The biggest consideration is with all the guts of the home, you know, your mechanical, electrical, plumbing. That's the biggest consideration because you have concrete walls. You can't just punch a hole in the drywall and, you know, change something if you put the shower in the wrong place. So that's really the biggest design consideration, but it's nothing new to home construction. You know, everyone in Europe and most of Asia and Latin America lives in concrete homes. So this is new to America, but not new to most of the world that already builds with concrete. So there are some design considerations and construction process considerations to make sure that everything goes in the right place and it's designed according to spec and built the right way, but it's not new to construction. It's just new to the States.
Want to be a little bit careful the way you do your foundation to make sure that it's properly supporting the weight of the walls, which are heavier than a framed wall. I think Ethan's right about the mechanical and the mechanical and electrical, having that pre-planned appropriately so that we run conduit in our walls to run the electrical inside the walls before we fill the walls with that lightweight concrete. So once the conduit's in there, it's not going to move around. So we want to future-proof it, provide more outlets than would be typical maybe in a home because it's going to be difficult to add one. The conduit that we put in the walls, we oversize it. So if you ever want to run a different type of wiring or for Cat 5 or whatever you're going to do, whatever it's going to be around in 30 years for the next type of wire, it's easy to wire and replace. So there's some future-proofing thought from the idea that the walls should be there for 1,000 years because they're solid concrete walls. So of all the things that people say, hey, what are the disadvantages of living in a concrete home? The one that I don't have an immediate answer, this is not really a disadvantage, it's an advantage, would be, well, it's going to be difficult to remodel. So I'll tell people, design the house that you want on the front end, make sure it's going to be flexible as you grow, because you're not going to want to knock these walls down. It's going to be difficult. The flip side of that is it's difficult because they're really strong, and isn't that the point of a house anyway?
The design process combines several components to translate to 3D printed construction, including a scan of the model for the robot to interpret the design, and an augmented reality application to monitor the tool paths on site.
pretty straightforward. We have a 3D modeling program that can import a CAD or a Revit or a SketchUp model, and then it will convert it into, it'll slice it and convert it into tool paths for the robots. And then we have an augmented reality application that you can put on and see all the tool paths and the robot movements kind of projected into the real world. So you step on your foundation and you put your goggles on and you see everything in the house projected through augmented reality. And then that also tells that program kind of allows a back and forth between the robot and the human operator. The robot's kind of saying, hey, move me here first and then here next. And then as the robot prints the house, it kind of fills in the projection of the house as it's being built. But all this is done as automatically as we can do it. We try and lean hard as we can into artificial intelligence to really automate this process. And that's moving quickly. So every day that moves a little bit faster. We're not too far away. And the end result of this is going to be that you're going to sketch up a sketch of a house on a napkin. You're going to take a picture of it. And the AI is going to come in and do your architecture and your engineering and then create the instructions for the robots to build the house. This is happening with or without us, but it's probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 years away from getting to that level of automation on the design side.
Much to my surprise, the permitting process in Texas is far more lax than other states, entirely skipping the need to acquire a building permit through a building department. That was new to me.
Most Texas counties don't have building departments that you go through permitting for. We do have a lot of houses that are in permanent areas, like our Houston homes. And for that process, it really has not been a big issue because what we're building with is monolithic concrete. So I like to say it's kind of a new way of building an old structure. So as far as the permitting people are concerned, this is poured concrete or very similar to CMU block. So we have a talented structural engineer on staff, and he does the engineering and he stamps it and they look at it and they say, well, it's concrete. So they don't have much to say about it for the most part. There's little details that we have to work with them on, like the inspection process itself. These walls are open at the top before we fill them with concrete. But when they do their plumbing and electrical inspection, they've got to climb up and look down. So we have to kind of pre-clear that with them. So we have a ladder out there for them and things like that. But it's minor details, and it has not, you know, we've gotten several permits for houses in relatively strict areas, and it hasn't been a big issue.
Okay, so I've never had a guest tell me we don't have to get permits. like seriously, you can just build whatever you want?
In Texas? Absolutely, yeah. So
wow.
It's so funny. I mean, so I would say something about 75% of the counties in Texas don't have building departments. Now, there is a building code that you should follow, which we do, and you should professionally engineer all your structures. But in most Texas counties, there's no one to second guess whatever you want to do. And you would think that this would mean that we have buildings falling over and collapsing and giant slums built. It's not like that at all. I mean, you can go out to a lot of these Texas counties where real estate values are really high and people build beautiful homes and there's no building department and they're building $8 million homes. And there really are very few issues with the process because consumers are much more savvy than I think people give them credit for. So the consumer is going to ask for a well-built house. The liability is, of course, still on the builder. So if anything happens to that home, we have statutory home warranties here in Texas. So, well, the statutory home warranties have sunsetted, but they become the common law standard for home warranties so that all homes more or less are going to have an implied warranty is, you know, that it's well constructed and it's not going to have issues. So that liability means that people engineer their homes and they get built and we're all professionals here. So it's less of an issue than you would think. And it does speed up the process a lot in a lot of these counties, which has in turn made Texas kind of an incubator for construction technology and property technology, because there are less roadblocks. If you want to pilot a new construction technique and you want to build a home with it, there's no one that's going to stand in your way other than your own making sure you do it right, especially if you're going to sell that home. But that's the way it is. And it's not just Texas. I think a lot of states are like that. If you get outside of the Californias and the New Yorks and you go to the middle of the country, the majority of counties don't have building departments, period. So even though there are statewide codes, there's no one to do any type of enforcement. And so what those counties will do is they'll publish a letter that says, we don't have a building department. Buyers, do your own inspections. Sellers, do your own inspections and work it out amongst yourselves. And that's what most places do.
Interesting. That's really, that's a first for me. I keep thinking I've been around for so long, I'm not going to hear anything new. In every interview, I hear something new. While learning and adapting to new technology, software, and AI tools within the architectural realm is nothing new, AI integration is critical to the 3D printing construction process, particularly around understanding and advancing automation.
Most of our structural engineers, I mean, they're using AI-empowered programs to do the bulk of the initial pass engineering work anyway. So we're just integrating that. And then architecture is coming along as well. So the idea of taking a basic design and translating it into full set construction drawings, that's very ready for artificial intelligence to take over. And I think most architects understand that. You know, we work with a lot of architects and we get a lot of calls from architects that understand that their profession is going to change rapidly. And a lot of the bulk work, the drafting work is going to be taken over by AI. We're not the ones doing that. That's out there in the world. The AI architects and the AI engineers, that's progressing faster than we can ever progress it. We're the bridge. So once you have all that intellectual work being done by AI, it still has to translate it into the physical world. And that's where robotics and AR step in. So we're hoping for a very seamless transition in a seamless world where AI can do the bulk of the work in designing and engineering the home, communicate that work directly to the robots so they can then put it into the physical environment.
And people relying more on software and computers is nothing new. So people in construction who have to adapt to that are not going to be blindsided by any means. I think the other piece that people in construction will want to get a grasp on is the other building methods and other building materials that are out there, and just increasing their awareness of what building systems are and what's out there. You know, it's not just stick framing for residential and then concrete and steel for commercial buildings. There's going to be a lot more options as far as materials and building systems and building products go. And there's really a lot of innovation happening in the space, you know, both due to affordability and the cost issue, and also on the climate and sustainability angle, with recycled materials and new composites and other lightweight solutions. You know, there's a lot of wood replacements out there too, where there's potential to be much stronger and lighter and cheaper than steel, but with many different forms and shapes because it's a wood-based product.
And I would say that when you look at the larger world of construction tech, what we got first was the software, because that's what Silicon Valley knows how to produce is software. So we are now overwhelmed with BIM tools and project management tools and logistics management tools. So like if you're in construction, your inbox is full of everyone. Every day you're pitched some new software tool that's supposed to help the construction industry. What's lagged behind is the harder part, which is the actual technology that actually builds things, that physically builds things. So that's going to be robotics in some way or another, it's robotics, whether they're working on site or working off site in a factory. So when we're talking about the traditional manufacturing process, the key to unlocking the efficiencies that can bring to construction is it truly automated? So there are lots of prefabricated building technologies that still rely on framers framing the home in a factory in pieces and bringing it out. Kind of in my view, that's missing the opportunity of truly automating the process. You're industrializing the process. So you've moved from 1920 to 1945, but you haven't automated the process and got it into 2025, which is going to be through the use of, you know, various types of robotics and machine automation. So that's the frontier that's lagged behind, and that's the the part that we're trying to fit in as best we can.
The exterior is comprised of 3D printed concrete walls laid out by the robot, while the roof system is made up of thermal SIP, or structural insulated panels, to create a tight and efficient envelope.
With the 3D printed exterior walls, those are made with our concrete mortar, and they're filled in with a lightweight concrete. So all the exterior walls themselves are the 3D printed mortar. And then for our roof system, it's a metal SIP panel. So it's a thermally broken SIP panel. We get about R35 on those roof panels. And then we're providing additional insulation to get to that R65 number. So 99% of the house is either metal SIP panel on the roof and concrete 3D printed walls for the exterior walls. There are some wooden supports and decorations and cladding that go along that front porch, but the home is essentially just metal panels and 3D printed concrete.
Yeah, it's exterior and interior on the 3D printed concrete. So there are some 3D printing companies that just do exterior walls. We think that's probably because their cost structure is probably still not low enough to be able to efficiently do interior walls. We have a lower cost structure, so we might as well do interior walls. You get some advantages by doing the interior walls in concrete. First of all, everything's load-bearing, so you're just continuing to increase the strength of the home. I don't think there's any type of a storm that could ever blow one of these homes over. But also, all those interior walls are fully insulated, and they're adding to the thermal mass of the house. So the house is like a giant heat sink. So it's really hard to knock it off center when it comes to the average temperature it wants to maintain. So it's really slows down temperature changes inside the house, which increases energy efficiency.
Inside, the home's character comes alive through curved, multicolored accent walls and a 3D printed kitchen island, celebrating the intersection of design, technology, and craft.
This house, we wanted to lean into some of the design, unique designs, elements we could achieve with 3D printing. So it's a little bit wilder than a lot of our houses. On the exterior, it looks, from 300 feet away, it looks relatively traditional. It's got a traditional roof line on it, big wraparound porches, but there are very few straight walls in the house. So the front's got kind of these curves that curve out and back in, and then it's got a lot of the walls on the inside are curved. They're straight where they need to be for where you're putting your furniture likely and things like that. But there's a lot more curvature than you would see in a traditional home. So a lot of the unique features, you know, we have some parametric walls that were printed. They have these kind of parametric kind of organic curves to the walls with some kind of unique pigmentation in the concrete. So we're leaving some of that exposed. We have, for example, that we printed the bathroom. So the master bathroom is like a big room almost that's printed because everything is concrete. So it's already waterproof. So we have this kind of room with a bunch of shower heads coming off the walls and a bathtub in it and a drain in the middle. And it's round. So there's a lot of that going on in this house. There's a little library that's kind of cool. It's a little circular library where, you know, we have shelving, you know, built in with the 3D printing. So we did a lot of that in this house because we could, and we'll see if someone buys it, but I think it's going to be pretty cool.
The home pushes the limits of innovation while embracing sustainability. Every decision, from the structural systems to the smallest detail, was guided by Passive House standards, ensuring exceptional durability, energy efficiency, and comfort.
There's a lot of different factors that go into Passive House and what qualifies for Passive House standards. They generally care about your energy efficiency and your power usage and also the air quality. So that's something that people may not think about when they're talking about an energy efficient home is what's the air quality like. Something that a Passive House needs to get right is the airflow and the air seals that go in that house so that you're really controlling the flow of air, the air quality. So we're doing a lot of things on this house, you know, like beefing up the insulation in the walls and in the roof. In the roof structure, we're going to have R65, which is well above what most local standards are. There's also an air gap test that you have to do to ensure that you have a completely sealed envelope around the whole home. So there's no air leaks. You're not letting any hot air in or cold air out in the summer. And so that's something that very few homes will have done on them, is to figure out where those air gaps are and to create a seal around them. And also making sure that we have triple pane glass windows. And there are no weak points in this home where you could lose energy or let air in. And there's a special HVAC system that controls different parts of the home and also monitors that air quality. So I would say those are the main features of a passive house. But there's a lot of science and testing and certification that goes into it.
Because 3D printing is still an emerging technology, the material science and consistency of construction through 3D printing can still present occasional hurdles.
It still really is the mixing and pumping and material science side. So this is not as consistent as we need it to be right now to really get the full efficiencies of what this process promises. So we work on it every day, increasing the consistency of the materials and the consistency of the pumping equipment. It's just where the rubber hits the road. It's where everyone struggles. And so we'll have days sometimes where it's just not printing right. They're becoming fewer as we go, but we still have days where we want to do four walls and instead we do two because, you know, we had some failures and equipment problems, and that's still definitely there with new technology.
The 3D printing construction process is all about efficiency and function. When the process runs smoothly, it's an incredibly fast build, creating several walls in half the time while reducing human labor.
There's some amendments we would make to a traditional process and timeline. So the point of automation is you're trying to reduce human labor or multiply the productivity of human labor. So when we're 3D printing walls, we're replacing three or four trades that would normally be building that wall: framers, insulation people, drywall people, painters. So we're trying to collapse some of that. So it does collapse the stack a little bit, which is a good thing because that lowers administrative costs as well. So the typical process is we're going to pour a regular foundation. We all build on slabs out here in Texas. And then we're going to have the machinery and the operators arriving shortly after that slab is cured. And then we're going to try and get in and out with the printers so they can go do other work and remain productive. So the printing process happens really quickly. In a small house, it might be 3 or 4 days when we print all the walls and then we're out. But then we fill those walls up. That takes a day. And then the SIPS panels are arriving, hopefully concurrently to that. And then we have another crew that comes in and installs the SIP panels for the roof. So we're trying to compress it a little bit. We are successful sometimes in moving faster than traditional processes, and we're unsuccessful sometimes moving faster in traditional processes because it's still relatively new. So far we've been really happy and encouraged with what we can do on a cost savings basis. And we've been encouraged, but a work in progress on whether or not how much time we're saving. Conceptually, it saves quite a bit of time, but that requires everything to go smoothly every time, which it doesn't because it's all new tech.
The operators of the 3D printing robot often come personally familiar with construction work on site, rather than a computer science technician who might be more familiar with an office environment.
So our print operators are all our in-house employees. So we, you know, when we're printing as a service, as a subcontractor, you know, we're bringing the people to operate the robots. We do have certain partnership models where we're beginning to train other people to operate our system. It's designed to be relatively user-friendly with the kind of the support from us on the back end. So it takes someone probably a month of doing it to really feel super comfortable operating the robot and the mixing system and all this other stuff. It's not that hard to find those people. We actually draw them from the construction industry because it's easier for us to train a ambitious stonemason or framer that has, you know, some background or some ability to understand some of the robotics in the computer, but those people are out there. It's easier for us to train them to operate the robot than it is for us to train a computer science major to want to work in 110 degree heat outside, you know, every day of their life forever. So I actually prefer to have someone from a job that's not always so fun, because it's more fun to operate the robot than it is to lay CMU blocks or to do roofing or something like that. So that it's a labor saver for them, and, you know, a breath of fresh air, whereas is someone that's used to an office job going into a construction job, I think is, we've done both and we found we have better retention going the construction to construction rather than office to construction, because that's a harder transition for a lot of people to make, I think. So those people aren't that hard to find because it's cool, it's fun. You get to see your productivity really multiplied. So you get to see, like, hey, you know, it used to take me a day to build a 10 by 10 foot wall with CMU block. Now I can do it in 50 minutes. I get it. I'm excited. So, you know, let's do 5 walls today. So those people are out there, and we have kind of a wait list of the resumes. On the backside, teaching subcontractors how to work with the slightly different wall assemblies, that hasn't been a big problem either, because we try and make it look to them like any other job they're on. So when the walls are done, they're monolithic concrete walls. We'll have anchor bolts already set inside them to attach whatever framing we're going to use, whether it's steel, we prefer steel or wood. So when they show up, it looks like a regular concrete wall, like they're used to working with. And then for like the electricians, we already have the conduit installed in the wall, so there's pulling wire. So to them, it looks like any other commercial electrical job, and the plumbing's the same way. So we put in our scope the unique stuff. So when the skilled trades come on site, it's going to look pretty normal to them.
In a time when Texas faces increasing energy challenges and unpredictable weather, particularly following the great freeze of 2021, the Red Rock House stands as proof of concept. It's not just a custom home, it's a resilient, design-driven vision for the future of sustainable living. Before we close out this episode, I always try to gain some additional insight from our guests about the greater industry. I was curious about what the biggest issues are they face in 3D construction today, and how quickly will this technology and methods advance?
There's a lot more that goes into it than you might see online. So there are quite a few companies that are out there selling 3D construction printers, and it is in their best interest to present it as kind of a turnkey solution that, hey, if you spend $1 million with us and you buy this equipment, it's going to work well, and you know, you'll be able to unlock these cost savings and economics. And none of them are there yet, but that's what it's in their interest to show. So the best word of wisdom I would say is, if you're looking to get into specifically concrete printing, 3D concrete printing, do some really intense due diligence on the people you're going to partner with to do that. And the key piece of due diligence is, how many homes have they built to date? And can I see one tomorrow being built? So find, there's only a few companies out there that you can say, hey, can I come to a construction site this week and see a house being printed? There's probably 2 or 3 companies in the world that would be able to accommodate that. And that's really telling as to where they're, the status of their technology. So if they're far off from being at that production level, then you're not going to be able to be at the production level yet either working with them. So what you'll see is, you know, they're printing one house every 6 months. It's a pilot house. It's all very guarded. You can't see it in process, and they'll have a media event or something like that where it's a very sanitized view of what goes on. So find the people that are out there doing it every day and are open to showing you how they do it.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Tim and Ethan. I hope this episode sparks a new idea, helps you solve a problem that you've been working through, or inspires the mark that you want to leave on this world.
The way I would count the scoreboard is, you know, how many units have we built? And mostly in that affordable, modern, smaller scale, How many units have we delivered? You know, how many lives have we made a little bit easier, a little bit better, because we're creating this new product, and we're creating this evolution of something that we all deal with every day, which is housing. So for me, it's all about the scoreboard. How many units have you built? How many people are living there? And I hope that that easily reaches seven figures by the time we're done.
Being an attorney, you push a lot of paper and you litigate cases and you make some rich people richer and some companies richer. It's pretty ephemeral. It tends to kind of come and go and be gone the next day. And I think the same is maybe true if you're developing software or a lot of services. But when it comes to building homes that you want to be there for 1,000 years, this is very, very solid. So it's a big change in mindset when you finish a home and you say, this is going to be there for a really long time, because it's all concrete. There's no organic materials in the structure. It's not going to change over the next 100 years. So in that course of 100 years, families are going to be raised there. Kids are going to have their first steps. And it's really a cool thing and a satisfying thing. And that's why in our company charter is that our company is going to be focused on affordable housing. So the big custom homes are awesome and they're really good to show off what we can do. But our heart and our focus is, can we bring the cost of construction down to get it back in line with the cost of everything else so that people can start affording homes again? There's one physical product in the world that actually will long-term increase your standard of living and your sense of well-being, and that's a home. Everything else is on the hedonistic treadmill. So every other product you buy, whether it's a car or a phone or a TV, will give you some satisfaction, some enjoyment for the short term, but that fades very quickly. Homes are different because they're very high up on your hierarchy of needs and your sense of comfort and well-being. If you own a safe and durable home, is something that sticks. So it's something that stays with you. So it's really unfortunate that we've been able to lower the cost of these products that don't give us that long-term increase in standard of living precipitously. So buying a computer now is, in real dollars, a fraction of the cost as it was to buy a computer in 1980. But the cost of homes has risen at 2.2 times the rate of inflation since the 70s. And it's same goes for good food. All the things that really matter are getting more expensive, than the things that maybe don't matter as much are getting less expensive. And so we're keenly focused on that problem. And that's how we want to make the world a better place, is to get that back in line so that we can increase this like collective wealth in a way that, with the things that are actually going to make us live better.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, visit rcat.com/podcast to see photos, details, and more related project and product information that we discussed today. While you're there, take a look around rcat.com. For over 30 years, RCAT has been the resource for AEC professionals to find the right products for their project. Try RCAT and see how their tools can save you time and money and help you get ahead on your next project. Visit rcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can support us by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this with your friends. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back to share more stories and lessons learned to help you navigate your next project.